Kingway, Fox, Beer, Locker's acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very harsh. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. He's a bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We hung about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series, well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, January 26, 2023. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That means we are live. That means you can pick up your phone right now and let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking at 646-668-2433. And if you're a fan of Star Trek Attack Wing, or actually the Dominion Alliance Wars in particular, you're definitely going to want to do that, because we have with us live in the studio tonight, Josh Dirksen, who actually designed all three of the games, the first one and the next two. We're going to be talking about the Klingon expansion tonight, and maybe we can get some information from Josh about the Romulan one. I don't know. We'll see. But our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We'll be live with Josh for about an hour, so start dialing and have your questions ready. But before we do that, though, we have a little bit of pod work and we have to do. First of all, I have to introduce you guys to my awesome Trekspurts, and we'll start off with Paul. And Paul is out in Portland. How you doing tonight, Paul?
Hey, brother. I'm doing well. It is good to be back on the promenade after a few weeks stuck in the pattern buffer.
Paul.
Nice to be back.
I hope that we don't have as many technical difficulties as we did without you last week. We had these giant golf ball-sized snowflakes falling up here in Rutland, and it was interfering with everything. I mean, I couldn't get the sound bites to play. They'd play 10 minutes after I played them. They'd play. It was crazy. So let's hope everything works
out. Usually, man, I'm the one who causes technical problems, is what I'm told. So I'm amazed that they happened without my presence. So that's great.
Oh, they did. There was gremlins everywhere. But, it's live radio. So when you're live,
you always charge through, man, no matter what happens. You are always ready to take it and go. The show must go on. That is your mantra.
So welcome back. Glad to have you back.
And thanks, brother. Also
from Portland as well, our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Oh, man, I am doing fantastic. It has been so long since we've gotten to talk about Attack Wing on the podcast, and tonight is like drinking Attack Wing from a fire hose. It's so cool to have Josh back on the podcast. We're going to talk about Attack Wing, and then we're going to talk about more Attack Wing. I just couldn't be more giddy about it, to tell you the truth.
It is going to be glorious. And rounding out our trifecta from Portland, we have our very own David the Donut Guy. How you doing, David?
I'm doing pretty well. I can't wait to talk about Attack Wing.
Did you bring enough donuts for everybody?
No, sorry. The donut shop closes early over here now for some reason.
I don't know what we're going to do with you. We're going to have to take away your moniker. You're not the donut guy anymore.
No.
A croissant guy.
I think David's the home cooking guy. He's always cooking something delicious.
He's the food guy. And wrapping out my Trek spurts, we have Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Still a little chilly in Vegas. We're still not in our normal low 60s, but
wow.
As long as the wind stopped, So I wouldn't mind more 40s in the morning instead of 30s.
Oh, man, 30s would be so awesome. That would be incredible. I could put on my shorts, open up the windows. 30s would be great. At any rate. So, guys, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Attack Wing. But first, there's one more thing I got to mention to you guys. We have weekend passes for AlienCon. That's right. I mention this every week. I'm going to say it again. I have passes, weekend passes, and I want to give them to you. Absolutely, totally for free. And Paul, how would somebody who's listening to this podcast, whether you're listening right now or Tuesday or Wednesday or any other day, until we announce that we have a winner, we don't have one. So you can take care of that anytime. And Paul, how would somebody get tickets to AlienCon if they wanted them?
I knew there was going to be a question in there somewhere. I was on bated breath. Well, what you would do, friends, is you would decide what it is you want to say, or you could just be completely spontaneous about it. You would get yourself over to trektalkin.com. Let me say that one more time. Trektalkin.com. And if you explore that website, which is your one-stop shopping portal for anything related to Star Trek and this podcast, you're going to see like a little microphone icon. And if you go on there, friends, you can click on that and record whatever kind of zany, highfalutin, nonsensical message you want. You can do the whole thing in Klingon if you want. We don't care. Leave a message. And if that message reaches Uncle Jim's ears through his long, wavy manes of Klingon hair, he's going to send those tickets to you so that you can go to AlienCon. Jim, did I get that right?
I think you got it right, and I have a little promo for AlienCon that Eric was kind enough to put together for us, which I'm going to play for you guys just to water your mouth a little bit and make you want to go to trektalkin.com and leave us a message.
AlienCon is back. Join us March 4th through 5th at the Pasadena Convention Center for a weekend of exploration and meet your favorite experts from Ancient Aliens, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, The Unexplained, and the proof is out there. Tickets at thealiencon.com.
And when you go to trektalkin.com, you will see a sponsor page, and on that sponsor page, you will see the logo for AlienCon. Click on that, and you can see all the great guests, all the wonderful events that are going to be planned, and all the great things you can experience while you are there. But first, you got to leave us a message and get yourself a pair of tickets. And along that vein, I want to say congratulations to Leslie Sawyer, because in honor of Sarah Mitch's birthday a few weeks ago, we had another free giveaway. I had some autographed pictures of Lieutenant Arian from season one of Star Trek Discovery that I wanted to give away. And it was simple. Go to trektalkin.com, leave us a message and tell us why you want the picture, and you get it. Leslie did that. She clicked on the microphone, recorded us a message, and I sent her an autographed picture. You can go to trektalkin.com, and you can see a picture of Leslie holding up her autographed picture. So congratulations to Leslie, and I'd love to see a picture of you there holding up a pair of passes to AlienCon. You know what to do. Go do it. All right, guys.
Man, that's a great con, too, man, isn't it? That's an awesome con.
There's so much stuff going on there.
There is so
much
going
on. Yeah, I mean, if you're
there.
A fan of, like, aliens and extraterrestrials and anything like that, yeah, I can't imagine missing this con. Eric Von Daniken's going to be there. I mean, it's just out of control. So this is this kind of historic opportunity, friends. If you're in that area, my goodness. Get a message.
Yeah.
Jim's giving these things away.
And somebody left me a message, but it was a two-minute blank message. So if whoever
it was a rehearsal, Jim. It was just a rehearsal.
Go back and re-record it, because I got the message and it was blank. And so I can't send you tickets because I don't know who you are. So go try it again.
Don't leave it in interpretive dance is what Jim is saying.
Right.
Right? We actually need to be able to hear your words. We can't see what you're doing there.
We'd love
in
to.
In your quarters, your shuttlecraft, or wherever you may be. We can imagine it, but we'd really rather hear from you.
That's right. So go back and re-record your message, and you can get a pair of tickets for AlienCon. I'd love to get them to you. And they're digital, too, so all I do is just boop to your email, and it's that simple. So please, go and do that. We would love to hear. And then after you go to the convention, you can call back the podcast and tell us all about it. That would be even better. All right. So with all of that out of the way, are you guys ready to talk about some attack wing alliance in particular?
Yes, please.
Are we ready to dive in?
Yes.
All right, guys, the phone lines are open, and we have Josh on the line with us. How you doing tonight, Josh? Welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's been a while, hasn't it? Now, before we get started. I wanted to ask a couple of questions. So this new one, this Klingon expansion, is compatible with the first one that came out, right?
Absolutely. It is designed to be a part two, and it is, in fact, labeled as such.
Now, if I haven't completed part one or I don't have part one, can I still pick up part two and play it?
Yes. You'll be able to start the campaign from the beginning of part two. Functionally, we made 9 acts overall, 3 acts in each box. You can start at act 4, which is the beginning of the second box. The only caveat being this set does not have dice, damage deck, or maneuver templates so that we could put a little bit of extra other stuff in the box. So you'll need a standard attack wing core set, or you'll need Alliance Part 1 for those attack wing components.
Okay, excellent. Excellent. That's totally cool. And this particular set has, and I saw the video, so that has a Vorcha, a Bird of Prey, two Cardassian ships, and a battleship, right, if I remember?
Yeah, the Jem'Hadar battlecruiser. Yep, that's the middle-sized one, not the big, big Jem'Hadar ship.
Right. And you also included the standard Star Trek attack wing dial, so you can use these in your regular game.
Yeah, that's right. This was something that players asked about when the first Alliance box came out, because those Dominion ships were not playable in standard attack wing, which was kind of frustrating for people because they were relatively out of print. So this time around, we said, well, hey, it doesn't take too much more, like, cost-wise to stick a punch board in there with the necessary bits. Let's do it.
That is cool. And, you know, I want to say I was running attack wing OP events for a couple of years at a local game store, and it was great, but I honestly got a little bit tired of the same thing every month, blow each other up, let's see who can put together the craziest deck and kill each other. And so they came out with a Borg cube, and the Borg game was a cooperative game, and I would play that, and everybody loved it, and we had a great time. Then COVID came. Then Alliance came. And I got to say, in my opinion, I feel that Alliance is the future of attack wing, because I think the cooperative gameplay is more engaging and just more enjoyable than just, let me go out and kill this other player. So I'm really, really excited for the cooperative gameplay and the style of Alliance. I think it's phenomenal.
Right on. Yeah, I think a lot of people have similar nostalgic memories about that Borg organized play kit. I've heard a lot of stories of people onboarding their otherwise wouldn't be gamer friends into Attack Wing by virtue of getting them to play together, and really excited to be able to make something that kind of enables that, right?
Yeah, because the one thing about Star Trek is Star Trek is a cooperative universe. The Federation is cooperative, and you know, in Alliance, that's what you do. You're cooperating with your fellow players instead of just trying to kill them. So
it's a good setting. Good mix.
It really is. It gets you talking. It gets you communicating and planning. And it's a lot of fun. So kudos on coming up with that. And this Klingon expansion, I'm really excited for, being a Klingon at heart myself. But at any rate, I don't want to take up all of your time. So, Eric, did you have any questions or comments for Josh?
Yeah, absolutely. Great to have you back on, Josh, and thanks very much, and thanks for doing that unboxing video. I know I had a good time kind of checking that out and seeing what we could see from that. I did have a couple questions. It looked like there were quite a few ship cards that you all sort of leafed through there, and I know that these ships come with dials. Are there unique named ships in this pack, or are they all sort of generic class ships?
They would all be generic ships. So you get the dials and base ships for the Klingon ships regardless, because those are the player ships and they don't need any of the fancy AI stuff on them. But the Jem'Hadar ships this time around get, I think there are generic skill one captains even in the box, which I'm surprised made it to the final printing. But there are, because you don't really need them, but there are dials and the base chips are double-sided. So you can play them either with the AI grids on the one side or the standard attack wing kind of look and feel on the back.
Excellent. Yeah, that's super cool. I love the double-sided grid there. So whereas normally you'd have kind of the unique on one side and the generic on the other side, you've got the generic on one side and the AI version on the other side. So that seems like a really good way to use that double-sided thing.
Yeah, the elites being on the back, we just found that nobody was using them.
Yeah.
Like in playtesting, we were just like, oh, that's really annoying to have to flip the base shit. I think we can probably remember that number four is the ace. Let's just not bother.
Yeah, and plus you've got the loadout cards and everything that sort of help remind you and whatnot anyway. So, don't need to double dip there. Very cool. I know that you were able to kind of show us, there was a little sneak in there showing us that, you know, as part of the continuation here, we've got some new Federation cards in our part two that we can use on our captains that have made it through part one, right?
Yeah, so there's kind of three main options for playing this box. You can start fresh with brand new Klingon captains, and you could do this whether you have box one or not. And they start off at, I think, captain skill four, something like that, higher than you would in the first game because it's assumed they come in at that point in your progression.
Mm-hmm.
You can start new Federation captains at skill four if you have box one. That's also possible. Or if you've played Box 1 through its completion, you can also bring those characters forward and keep upgrading them. And they'll be a little bit underpowered in terms of the cards they have access to, maybe, depending on how well you did, obviously. But you can also start bolstering them with some new stuff, and they'll probably be higher captain skill, which is its own advantage in the campaign's progression.
Yeah, especially as those elites get better and better, that higher captain skill becomes more and more important.
Oh, and that is absolutely true here. There are some, I think in this box, the ace enemies go up to like skill 7 or 8. So you can really start focusing on that if you want to get the drop on them.
Well, as David will tell you, when we play Attack Wing with each other, I'm always looking for that like 9 to 12 captain skill range. So I'm definitely a guy who lives
and dies. You must really like Khan then.
I do. He's one of the best, right? You throw an admiral on Khan, yeah. And you're always the best, no matter what. So it looks like they went back to some really good quality on the cards here, too. Obviously, I haven't put one in my fingers and felt it. I don't know if you've felt any of the newer cards from any of these new faction packs or not, but they kind of went back to that thicker stock, and it sounds like that's what you guys were saying on the video, too.
Yeah, I mean, when we finished boxes, for the original Alliance box, because it was also a smaller step up in card quality, but when we finished that box, I just had one request of WizKids, and I said, look, if you're going to print this, I'd like some nicer cards, preferably with a less obvious linen finish, and I'm really happy that they were able to do that.
Yeah, that linen finish can be a little distracting, and I just can't wait to see these new cards because I know that WizKids kind of went through that phase where all of their cards looked like that a little bit. Now they've kind of worked their way back out of it and gone back to the all glossy cards again. So super happy that this contains that.
Part of that is that they changed manufacturers.
Interesting. So that's an interesting question. So is your game here manufactured in the same place that, for example, the faction packs are?
I believe that's the case now. I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm just going off what they've told me in the past. But
sure.
At one point, and this is part of why there was such a long gap between the initial Alliance Box 1 and future Alliance content and all the rest is because I know that they were moving stuff between manufacturers, and they had some issues getting their plastics tooling reset. Obviously, I'm not really an official source on that, but this is just what I was told.
Sure, yeah.
Anyway, that seems to all be behind them, and I think everything is nice and smooth going forward.
Yeah, I mean, the set looks beautiful. I personally am a big fan of those metallic paint jobs, which it looks like this pack also has. I loved it when that first Dominion set came out. I loved the way the purple looks on them, honestly. And then,
they're sharp.
They look really neat, right? And honestly, if you're you don't need to paint these at all, but if you take the existing scheme that these things come with and you just do a little dry brush on them, it really starts to highlight some of those deeper parts of the models and stuff, and just makes them look really slick. So I'm digging on the fact that we've got some good quality models that come in this box as well.
Absolutely.
I don't want to take up all your time because I want Charles and David to also have a shot, but what I will ask, and we were chatting just a little bit before the podcast about, timeline of how long it's been since you sort of first pitched this game and then were able to get it into the public's eye, and then, now it's just continuing on, and then we've got a future part three coming on. I think that's all extremely exciting, and I know that we're all waiting for all those future stuff to come out, but as of right now, we're talking about this Klingon pack. So can you tell us anything more about what's inside this pack specifically? We sort of got a little shot of, some leafed through cards, and you gave us one really cool spoiler that was allowed you to basically, if you get a crit dealt to you, you get to do a crit back to your opponent, even if they have shields, a crit to their hull. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
sometimes that ability can sometimes finish off an AI ship before it gets really, the first one in a volley or something like that. You can really even the odds a bit before you even get to shooting back or whatever. It's especially good against the elite. AI ships, if they shoot before you and you get critically damaged, you can often soften them up for the rest of your teammates.
I love it. What is your favorite card in the pack? Do you have one?
Oh, that's really tough. I got to say there are some real bangers in this one. I'm just going to leaf through the ones I've got here real quickly. Probably Forward Battery, which is a Vorcha only upgrade, if I recall. Vorcha or Negvar class only. And it's a 5-cost weapon upgrade that is limited to once per ship. But it is when you are declared the target of an attack, if the attacking ship is in your forward firing arc, you get to roll an attack die. On a hit or critical hit, you deal 1 damage to the attacking ship before it attacks you.
Nice.
So this is literally like, if you're going to build a Vorcha in this box, one of the ways you can spec it out is just as the party tank. Like, you're literally going to park in front, all weapons suppressing fire forward, anything that wanders into your arc or shoots at you, you're going to lay the hurt on in return. And there's a card that lets you share target locks with other ships. You can have 2 target locks, and you can let one of your allies borrow one.
Oh.
All those together, you can make a really cool little tanky command Klingon ship, which I think is a different feel than you maybe have been able to do in the past.
Yeah, typically you're living by the seat of your pants on those cloak dice, and it's nice to have whatever help you can for, to support those, since those are anything but guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. There's also a hull upgrade. So a lot of the cards in Alliance Box 1 were really boilerplate stuff for Federation. Like just like a utility toolbox of like, oh, I want to be more defensive or I want to be more maneuverable or all that stuff. And really, we kind of looked at the card list for the first box and said, Klingons probably want a bunch of this stuff too, just because we like the way those combos fit together. And then it was just a question of sort of tweaking all the individual cards so that there were good kind of upgrade paths throughout your whole little career as a Klingon captain.
Oh, that's cool, because it weaves in more of that story element. And, I must say that I love the kind of mixture of having a character that you care about and then also laying attack wing on top of that. It's not quite a role-playing game, but, if you get together with your friends and you're rapping about the Klingons while you're playing, it can really become part of the story.
Absolutely. Yeah, the light RPG element is one of my favorite parts of wargaming, and I'm especially drawn to games with campaign modes for that reason.
Yeah.
That's what I play, so it's cool that I get to design them.
Well, it is so cool, and you have designed some of the best. I mean, this one growing out of, if I remember right, the Heroes of the Atari Cluster stuff that you did way back in the day for X-Wing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the beginning of it.
Yeah, and so, you know, thankfully we ported you over to Star Trek here and got your skills working in this universe.
There you go.
Before I let you go on to our next host, I will just say I will encourage you to check out that new Ships of the Line pack that came out, if you have not yet, because that one actually comes with a campaign in it that you can play right with the box. So it's a faction pack and a campaign thing all in one, which is pretty cool. So enjoy that if you haven't checked it out yet.
If I remember correctly, some of the ships in that box are also playable or upgradable to in your Alliance campaign, right? That's a Federation set?
That is the Federation set, yeah. So we've got a Kira class in here. We've got the Saber class, the Sovereign class, and the Prometheus class. You don't have Prometheus. Mm-hmm. Is Prometheus part of Dominion, part of Alliance? I can't remember.
It's playable if you get to Captain Skill 8, which I think is too much of an endeavor in the first box.
Yeah.
But it is listed among the upgrade paths, and you could, in theory, port forward a Federation Captain and get them all the way promoted to a Prometheus. That's possible.
Wow, that ship is just, I love that ship. The all-white maneuver dial just is amazing. So, yeah, maybe I'll try to get there in box number two here. We'll see. Thank you, Josh, for letting me... or three, yeah, depending on how long it takes, right? To get all the way to eight, it probably is going to take till three. Thank you for letting me bother you with a bunch of questions here. I'm going to pass you right along to my good friend David, and I will say that David and I are both big Attack Wing fans, and we play quite a bit of Attack Wing with one another. So we will be playing this particular game together, right, David?
Oh, yeah, we got a long history of... making me into a pink shirt, let's just say that. Yeah, so I got a really interesting question that Jim brought up earlier. Jim mentioned something about, like, the whole dials of the Jim Hadar ships in the first part of the game not having dials or something like that. And I was curious...
Yep.
Does Box 2 have the dials for the Jim Hadar attack ships?
No. No, just for the models that are included in the box. We didn't actually have enough punch board left to go back and do the original first box. So, unfortunately, those will still be dial-less forever.
Okay, that's cool. I was a little confused about that question if I was like, wait a minute. But, yeah, cool. So, my next question would be that they have a combination of Lions and the original Attack Wing game. Is there any other ships that can be added, like, say, Ferengi ships or Kazons, if somebody wanted to mix it up a bit?
Well, mechanically, there's no reason you can't play whatever you like, although I will say all of the upgrade cards for Alliance were specifically designed at a very carefully balanced power level so that there was nothing kind of too crazy in there. You probably will find you can play a lot of those other ships if you just want to add them in. There's obviously nothing stopping you mechanically. It's all based on Star Trek Attack Wing. All the underlying system is there and works. If you specifically want to play stuff that is fully supported by Alliance with upgrade cards that are designed to work with them, the other supported Klingon ships are, of course, the Negvar. And then if you want to make things hard on yourself, you can play a Birel or a Katinga-class battlecruiser. But really, the Cavort-class Bird of Prey in there and the Vorcha attack ship in there are pretty well equipped to take you through.
Okay. Yeah, just make it harder to get up in levels, I guess.
You can't really unlock the Negvar until close to the end of your captain's career because it is the Klingon flagship, right?
Yeah. Cool.
That's okay. Cavort's the best ship anyway. Yeah. That's my favorite.
So,
and you will
be
relying be on your
kind...
evade dice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are there going to be any kind of future alliance games? Like, is there going to be a part 4 or 5?
So I can tell you, for the sake of the Dominion War trilogy, the scenarios follow the plot line of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And the third box that is Romulan-centric, the last scenario in that box is actually a two-parter. You play back-to-back, and it is the based on the finale episode of Deep Space Nine, the what is it called? I can't remember now off the top of my head. But
what
it's the, two-parter finale.
Oh, What You Leave Behind?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, The Invasion of Cardassia.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so here's a – I know this is probably going to be maybe part 3 box, but in that particular episode, the Cardassians betrayed the Dominion. Is that part of the scenario?
Yes, there are no Cardassian enemies. Well, we're tipping our hand a little bit for box 3 here, but – yes, there is a point in box 3 where you stop encountering Cardassian enemies and you're actually facing off against the Breen alongside the Dominion instead.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
Because box 3, I think they've announced roughly what's in it, but basically it's got two Dederix-class warbirds, and it's got the Dominion battleship, the really big one. Same sculpt as ever, but it's the biggest of the Jem'Hadar ships. And it's got two Breen cruisers as well, so they are... they show up in a bunch of those scenarios and are a real pain to deal with.
Oh, cool. So they're all basically a bunch of AI ships.
Yep.
Nice.
Wow.
Cool. Let's see here. Is there any favorite cards in the part 3 that you wanted to share? I know we're talking about part 2, but I just wanted to find out if there's like anything that we should, you know...
So part 3, so part 2, box 2 has, I believe it's 24 Klingon upgrade cards. A couple of them are duplicates, but they're mostly unique, and they're across all the different types, so crew, weapons, systems, and metals. There are 24 Klingon cards, and there are 4 new Federation cards to get your, to give your Federation captain some higher level stuff to do. They're generally more expensive and more powerful. Because by the time you finish, if you've played the first 2 boxes and you get into the 3rd box, you can keep carrying forward those captains. So if you're a Klingon captain who joined up in the middle of the war and you're going to ride it out all the way to the end of the campaign, you're probably pushing captain skill 7 or 8 by the start of the 3rd box anyway. And there are some good higher level tricks for you available at that point. So box 3 also has a selection of Romulan cards. I think it's 24, but I'm not sure offhand. And then I think 4 or 5 Klingon cards to carry forward again for your Klingon captains who have maybe started building up specific combos from box 2 that they want to take to the next level for the finale. And you will need that help. Those last missions in that last box can be pretty punishing.
Wow.
That sounds amazing.
Cool. It sounds really fun. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I think that's pretty much all for my questions. I think I'm going to pass it on to Charles.
Well, no real questions to throw out. Now you've kind of gotten all the questions answered. I am looking forward. I can't believe that's true. I didn't get a chance to really play a whole lot of the first box only because of COVID issues. But I know I'd like to get it back on the table and start playing it again. We did have fun with it one evening of taking a few Star Trek club fans and making them their own captains into jumping into that game. And I think they definitely enjoyed it, and I'd like to try to do that again sometime with a few club members. Okay, you're Star Trek fans. Let's see you get up there and actually fly your own ship.
Yep. See how tough it is in the captain's chair.
Exactly.
Yeah, and speaking of being in the captain's chair, Josh, I mean, as a game designer, you know, Star Trek Attack Wing Alliance here is obviously not the only game that you work on. What is it about designing games that you really enjoy? And how does this particular game sort of help fulfill some of that for you?
I think for me, the magic is really when I see games acting as a really well-defined space that people can kind of use to get together. Like I know a lot of people who are a little bit socially awkward, and for them, gaming is an excellent outlet. But I just see games, like I see the power that games have to bring people together from, you know, different backgrounds, right? Or, and create this shared interest or shared space that, you know, everyone can participate in. So I really just like the community building aspect of it. And especially I feel like campaign games are really good for that because you, you know, you start playing a game like this and over time you, you know, show up to the same game store or hang out with the same group of friends long enough and it becomes a shared story that you can bond over in a way that kind of is like nothing else. And for me, getting, you know, being able to create those experiences, to design them so that other people can have those moments is really special for me.
Yeah, it's nice to be the facilitator of such a magical thing that is like a little out of your control once you release it into the world, but you know that it's out there doing work for you.
Yeah, that's a really good way to conceptualize it. Somebody, I was having a conversation with somebody at one point, and they were like, oh, I think they were trying, I forget what they were trying to get me to do. And they were like, oh, that's not very fun. And I just said, well, listen, I don't have to be fun. I design the fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine different game designers have different takes on that, too. We want to make sure we get give Paul a shot at you, too. So, Paul, let's pass the mic over to you, bud.
All right, Josh, I got it. Well, we got out of the box here, man. Are you the same Josh Dirksen, number 33, who played forward for the Bellarmine Knights?
No, I don't think
you're
so.
You're a different Josh
Dirksen.
He's
also Canadian.
Okay, I think so. I'm not 100%, but I'm like
I can tell you for sure. I can tell you for sure that I have not played in that position or in that sport.
Okay.
But I do know that there is a Canadian basketball player named Josh Dirksen, same spelling and everything.
Yeah, I thought maybe that was you. So I wasn't positive, man. So my icebreaker, man. But again, I kind of come into
that's
this conversation with a lot less immediate gameplay than my colleagues here, especially Eric, who I think pretty sure has a room in his house that is wallpapered with Attack Wing cards. I'm almost positive because he's got... He's got more minutia. He can go like, oh, you mean the Encendi Attack Wing card? Why, sure. Let me tell you all about that. And
I'm just waiting for that one.
He's got everything. I mean, it's crazy. But so I want to go beyond the game, though, just real for a couple seconds,
absolutely,
if you don't mind, Josh, is like, tell me, do you remember for yourself like a gateway moment where you realized that like Star Trek was going to be a thing that you were never going to shake off? Was there a particular episode of a particular part of the franchise that was your just like never going back moment?
So I'm going to date myself here a little bit. I remember as a kid when the finale for Star Trek Next Generation, All Good Things, was aired on the Jumbotron in Toronto's Skydome Sports Stadium.
Cool.
And I remember this being like the TV event when I was a kid. And I didn't really watch Next Generation. That was really more my parents' show. But I used to watch episodes, reruns, of course, of the original series on like Saturday morning TV. I think Space Network in Canada used to air it. They would just do like a Saturday morning toss marathon. I remember watching that pretty regularly. Between TOS and the animated series, which I also watched a lot of as a kid, it was up there. It was in that constellation. And I was a bigger Trek fan. I was introduced to Trek and was a Trek fan before I was a Star Wars fan. I remember also as a kid, my parents, I came into the room one day and they had A New Hope on TV. I guess it was just airing on the whatever movie channel or whatever. And I was like, oh, what the heck is this? Where's Star Trek? oh, this is weird. Who are these people? What are they doing? And of course, it was like halfway through the movie at this point, so it's they're on the Death Star, and it's a little bit weird, a little bit disorienting to come into that film at that point. But hey, I was
like, wait a minute, those aren't
phasers.
Those aren't phasers or communicators. What's going on here?
Why are they saying warp?
Yep. But by the time we got to the end of A New Hope with the space battle over the Death Star, I was all into Star Wars. But my Star Trek beginnings were way before that.
That's great, man. That's great. How are you enjoying like the new era? I call it the Paramount Plus era with like Discovery and Strange New Worlds. I mean, it's a cornucopia of new Star Trek. You know, something for everybody. Are there particular arms of that creativity that you really are drawn to that you're liking?
So I've kept up with all of it. I've watched. I'm caught up on Picard. I think I'm caught up on Discovery. Got four seasons of Discovery now, if I recall.
Yep.
And what, three seasons of Lower Decks? I think I'm caught up on that too.
That sounds right.
So.
And one season.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
season
I've seen that as well. I always forget that exists because it's somewhat strange and somewhat hard to find and watch. But no, my wife is a big Trek fan, so we watched them all. I find Picard a little bit uneven, but not bad. It's kind of nice to check in with Jean-Luc, but yeah, the story is not great. Second season better than the first, I think. Lower Decks, I would say, is probably my favorite Trek. I think it's among the best Trek that's ever been written, just for how much it gets done in 20 minutes. I'm always just astounded. And it's just like a fun, goofy romp with a ton of like deep cuts. You're like, oh, that was mentioned in this one episode 30 years ago, like, right? It's awesome for that. So really love Lower Decks, and I find all the characters are great. The one that was kind of strange for me was Discovery, and I imagine I'm not alone in this, but Discovery Season 1 was really not the Star Trek we knew and loved, and I think it kind of set off on the wrong foot in some ways, the kind of Paramount Plus era. But Season 1 has its moments. I like the Mirror Universe arc. But I really like where it goes kind of after Season 2. Like, obviously, Pike's great and Strange New Worlds. Actually, that's the only one I'm not caught up on. I forgot entirely about Strange New Worlds. But Pike is great. Loved Season 2, but really, really like Discovery Seasons 3 and 4. I think it's a really fresh way to do Trek that seems like a fitting continuation of the brand.
Excellent, man. Well, I think when you get caught up with Strange New Worlds, I predict you're going to really enjoy it. It's definitely...
I think so. It's got Anson Mount. It'd be hard not
to. Yeah, he does a great job. God, yes. There's some very clever writing on that show. You know, they do. You were talking about the writing on Lower Decks, and they do some great... Mm-hmm. There's some really clever, thoughtful writing going on in the new show. So I'm super optimistic that they'll give us a few good... entertaining years. So I think you really enjoy checking it out and everything. But yep. Thank you for letting me just ask a few questions and kind of pick your brain a little bit here to learn more about the real Josh, if you will. So
absolutely.
I'm looking forward
I'll drop one more little.
Please.
I'll drop one more little tidbit that I don't know. It's probably not on anyone's radar because I don't think it's been officially announced, but I got very into Star Trek Discovery Season 1 specifically because there is a board game that I worked on.
What?
That is based on Star Trek Discovery.
What?
Hold the phone. What is this, Josh?
I'm quickly
Googling. It's not Star Trek Alliance. It's something else.
What?
This is something that's been released?
Not out yet. I don't even think it's announced yet. But it's probably coming later this year.
I feel like I kind of keep up with the heartbeat of game. You're not talking about a video. You're talking about a board game, right?
I am talking about a board game.
And I feel like I have my finger on the pulse, and I have heard nothing. That's pretty good spoiler, Josh. I want to say, could you tell us more? But you probably can't. But that sounds amazing.
I will just tell you what's called Star Trek Black Alert.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Excellent.
Oh,
You know, I'm staring right now at my Captain Lorca autograph on my wall, and it says, "To Jim, Black Alert, Jason Unger." So,
nice.
There you go.
Wow.
That's a great name, man. That, and you way to you know, drop something right out here on the show.
That was so cool.
Get everyone titillated, because we're all like, I don't think anyone's heard of that. So that's a great reveal, brother.
Either.
Thank you so much. And do you have a sense of when? Will that be 23 this year that we'll be getting our mitts on that?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I just know that my involvement with it is done. There is a finished game that exists that is somewhere in the pipeline.
Sweet.
Very cool. Well, what? I think you've got some eager beavers here.
Take my money.
Scouring the search engines to see what we can learn, man. But I hope you'll ping us and let us know as soon as there's some a little bit more official notice so we can get in there on the ground floor and learn all about it. Super exciting. And I just love that you shared your personal opinions about, you know, influences and parts of the franchise that you really like, man. So thanks for being so open and talking with us like that. It's really great. And excited to get over to Eric's house and actually play these games for real when we get time. So that'll be a lot of fun, big discovery for me. So thanks, brother.
Thanks. Thanks for some great questions.
Well, Josh, I got to, just before we wrap things up, I want to ask you, can you tell us about any of the other Klingon cards in there that might be worth mentioning?
I'm sure a lot of them are worth mentioning. Let me see if I can find a gem for you here.
Yeah, find me a good one. Something really juicy.
All right, how about the generic Klingon helmsman who comes in this set? Because there was a really powerful generic Federation helmsman in Alliance Box 1. And we looked at them and we said, it'd be great if the Klingons had some generic crew. And all of them, again, are generic and are designed to be powerful abilities that you can kind of use throughout the course of each mission rather than just a lot of those really powerful single-use and flip effects. There's a lot of these ongoing powerful effects. So this is kind of in the mid-range here, but it's a two-point Klingon crew, just Klingon helmsman. After the ship performs a green or white maneuver, during the execute maneuver step. If you don't overlap a ship or obstacle, you can disable this card to immediately perform any one-speed maneuver from this ship's dial.
Wow.
Oh,
that's
so that'd
nice.
Be cool.
So this guy,
you could do
you want to put the hammer down and intercept that objective, or you got to run away from those Jem'Hadar? Hey, he's your man.
Wow.
Or you could do two
now
green.
Now he has a disable.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you can do two greens.
Two greens and get rid of
disabled,
two Ox powers. Oh, I love it.
Yes, you can. And because he's a disable, if you're not doing anything else and you're just like, I don't need a battle stations this turn. I don't need to evade. We're cloaked. Who cares? You can do a one-speed maneuver and use your action immediately following it to remove his disable and do him next turn.
Nice.
So it gives you a lot more flexibility in how your ships maneuver, and you're going to need it for some of the hit-and-run missions that the Klingons are tasked with. In box two.
Now, Josh, in I believe it was Kimpek's battle cruiser that came out in the Klingon Federation pack. That was one of the only ways for Klingons to get battle stations to use when they were cloaked. Is there any way for Klingons to gain that battle station advantage in this game to help with the cloak?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there are.
Excellent.
It was something we thought a lot about because it's a thing that they can't normally get, right?
Right.
So, let's see. We've got Disruptor Overcharge, which isn't necessarily a battle station's advantage, but can help in a similar way, which is when attacking with this ship's primary weapon at range 1 or 2, if your attack roll includes at least one critical hit, you can add a hit result to the total.
Nice.
And that's a generic 3-cost weapon. So just like, hey, who needs to convert battle stations when we can just add a hit?
Yeah.
And that could be really scary. You can get the Bird of Prey really splattering the regular Jem'Hadar attack fighters if you roll well. It's not uncommon for that guy to pop out of cloak and just utterly obliterate a 5-hull or even an elite Jem'Hadar battle or attack ship sometimes with that kind of stuff. We've also got some honor-themed stuff happening. There's a 2-point Klingon Talent, which if I recall is Klingon Captain only. But it's when attacking a ship with equal or higher captain skill, change one battle station to a crit.
Wow.
Nice. That's good automatic conversion. That's sweet.
But they have to be equal or higher skill, so you can't be dishonorable and pick off the lowling AI ships
right.
with it. You have to go for right. the elites for it
face
to really
to face.
Be worth it.
Batlist to batlist.
Right.
Yep.
I like that.
If I recall, there's also one. Oh, we've got a ramming focused Klingon card for the the Klingons. It's called Strafing Run. It's a 3-point talent, but you can only put it on a Kavort or Birel ship. So you've got to put it on the smaller, more maneuverable Klingon vessels. And this is execute maneuver step. If your ship's base or maneuver template overlapped an opposing ship, roll an attack die. On a hit or critical hit, the opposing ship suffers a damage.
Nice.
Because
nice.
You're
wow.
so fragile as a smaller Klingon ship, you get some economy. You know, if you are unlucky enough to bump an enemy ship, hey, there's a 50-50 chance they're going to take some damage for the insult.
That sounds so
right.
cool. I love it.
And there's
so
one
many
more I've got to find so I can read it.
Yeah.
I love the Klingon. They feel very Klingon-ish.
Yeah, we tried really hard to get that theme to kind of carry through.
Yes, yeah, so far they feel like Klingon tactics. Or
got
something
evasive
that, like
maneuvers.
War for ramming speed, you know?
Yep. Well, and here's the thing. Because we were designing this campaign with the kind of knowledge up front of like, hey, we're going to do Federation first, then we're going to do Klingon, then we're going to do Romulan. We wanted to make sure that each of those factions had a distinct identity within the cards within Alliance, so that when you build a fleet of player ships, like if you're going to play a 4-player version of the campaign, play it all the way through, you're going to find that each of the factions naturally settles into certain roles, and they complement each other in really nice ways. Like the Klingons are very punchy, but they're also a little bit fragile, and there are a lot of Federation abilities, especially some of the later ones you unlock, which allow for token sharing. So, hey, the Federation ship can produce 2 battle stations, and the Klingon ship can borrow one. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, the Federation ship is so focused on doing battle station stuff, that Klingon Vorcha that's got the double target locks, oh, hey, I can borrow one of those. So working together as a team in Alliance, they're actually better than the sum of their parts.
I like that.
That's really interesting.
That sounds so cool.
That does sound awesome.
And I think my
wow.
my bread and butter Kavort / Birel go-to in Alliance from this box is actually the generic operations officer. It's got the artwork is Alexander from one of the episodes, but it's a 4-point generic Klingon crew. If equipped to a Kavort or Birel class ship, add 1 to the ship's defense value. That's just flat up bonus. Your
nice.
Your Birel or Kavort is just more agile. And then when defending, you can convert 1 battle station to an evade.
Perfect. That's exactly what they
just
need.
Period. All the time.
Yep.
4 points.
Is that only
like,
one
hey,
per ship?
Cloaked, that's a lifesaver.
Yep.
Yeah. Definitely.
Is that right, only a 1 per ship?
Yep.
Oh. Yeah, 1 per ship.
So, Josh, we've talked about the Klingons. We've talked about the Dominion War. But I have a question. A little bit different. So are you planning on doing anything with Deep Space Nine, since Deep Space Nine was the centerpiece of the Dominion War, and we have a Deep Space Nine model, which is phenomenal, but it's very weak. It's not a very powerful play piece in the game. And the Klingon fleet did attack Deep Space Nine, and it held its own. Are there any plans to do anything involving Deep Space Nine in a future Dominion War expansion?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the Klingon attack against Deep Space Nine is before we meet the Dominion in the series.
Yeah.
I think it's season 3 or something, isn't it? Season 2
it
or
is.
3?
It's at the end of season 3. Yep.
Season 4.
Yeah, it's the crossover. Yeah, it's 3 to 4.
Yeah, it's a crossover thing.
Yeah. So that that particular event is a little bit before the chronology of the campaign, because box two with the introduction of the Klingons kicks off in, look at the back cover of the book and get my year right, 2373. So the Dominion has just come through the wormhole and has allied with Cardassia.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the beginning of season five or end of season five. I forget. It's one of the two-parters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it had something to do with the Klingon wanting to find the changelings or something like that. And they,
Yeah, because Martok was originally
changed. So when we come in at this point, the Klingons have already started their war with Cardassia and are siding with the Federation to form the alliance properly. So all the scenarios in this book pick up from there, and they end with So the first scenario is called By Inferno's Light, which I believe is actually that two-parter. And then, or it's in that story arc. The finale episode is called The Invasion of Beta Zed, which, if you'll recall, is around the time the Romulans get involved in the war. I think it's mentioned canonically just before In the Pale Moonlight, or just after. I can't remember.
Wow. Well, we got some great stuff, and I hope that Alliance keeps on going. I mean, we have Wolf 359. We got the Klingon Civil War. We got the Romulan Wars. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to draw from here still.
Oh, there's no shortage of stuff in the setting, for sure.
No, absolutely not. I hope that it sells well enough to keep you busy for a couple of years. Hopefully.
Oh, I'm kept plenty busy.
All right. Well, thank you very much for hanging out and talking with us about Alliance, and thank you for sharing some insights. And we're really psyched about Black Alert. That was an unexpected thrill for a bunch of Trekkies. So thank you so much, Josh. Oh, wait.
My pleasure.
Wait, we got a caller.
Thanks for having me.
We have a caller on the line.
A caller?
Josh.
What?
Ooh. Yes. Let me see. Good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight? Hello?
Uh-oh. Did we lose him?
Uh-oh. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Hello?
Oh, it's
Hello?
Ray. All right.
It's
well,
Ray.
Yeah.
Hey,
we can chat with Ray here in a minute. Yeah. Do you want to say goodbye to Josh here?
Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
We'll
how you doing, brother?
We'll be right back to you, Ray. All right. Well, thank you very much, Josh. We appreciate it.
Thank
Thanks
you so much, Josh. That was really fun.
Yeah.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
We're definitely going to have you back on when Black Alert comes out, for sure.
Sounds good.
Excellent. All right. Thanks a lot, Josh. Have a great night. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, guys, you can go out and look for Star Trek Alliance Dominion War Campaign Pack 2 at your friendly local game shop. So please go out and pick that up. I don't think you'll be disappointed at all. I know I really enjoyed a lot. So I'm looking forward to getting my hands on juicy Klingon card.
And we didn't talk about release date. It was originally scheduled to be released in February. The last that I've seen is that it's been pushed to March. So I don't think we know for sure if that's a solid date, but as of right now, it's supposed to come out in March.
Yeah, soon. Soon, soon, soon. So, Ray, what's going on, buddy? Oh, we lost Ray. Okay.
Oh, no.
Well,
hopefully you call back.
We'll see what happens here. Before we get into our Star Trek birthdays and our fan shout-outs, I have the Picard Season 3 teaser trailer, which I think is going to be on TV during the football game on Sunday or something.
I think it was last Sunday.
Oh, was it last Sunday? All right. Well,
and there's a whole new trailer coming out Sunday during the next game. It's a longer, bigger trailer that they're saving till this Sunday.
This is an old one. This is a short one. This is only a 30-second teaser trailer, but I wanted to play it for you guys anyway. So here it is, the Picard Season 3 trailer from last week's AFC playoff game, last Sunday, I believe.
There is something coming. Old friends and allies,
standing together again, reuniting to accomplish a shared mission and defeat an adversary unlike any other.
We will have vengeance.
An opponent wielding great power, determined to disrupt everything. The time to resist. Knowing your destiny must not be denied, because this decides everything.
This is the end, my friend.
Star Trek Picard, the final season, streams on February 16th.
Wow. Wow, I'm just getting psyched for this. So I wanted to play that for you guys, and we'll have the full trailer when it comes out next week. All right, guys, every week we do a fan shout out, and if you want to have your name mentioned on a future fan shout out, head over to our Facebook page. You can link to that from trektalking.com, or you can go to Facebook and find Trek Talking and Beyond. At the top of the page, you will see the Live Long and Prosper, and just drop us a line and tell us where you're listening from. If you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, you want to tune in because your name will be featured in a future fan shout out, and the whole world will know that you're not only a Star Trek fan, but you're a supporter of this awesome podcast, Trek Talking. And Eric, you want to get us started with our fan shout outs?
I absolutely do. We're going to go just south of here by 3,000 or 4,000 miles and say hello to top fan Jelsier, Costa Rica. That's what they say their name is. Luckily, they are in San Jose, Costa Rica as well. So, Jelsier, thank you so much for saying hello to us and saying pure life. Ooh, I want to know more about that. I'm going to be Googling that later. Pure life to you as well, Jelsier. Happy birthday. Thank you so much for getting a hold of us on our Facebook page. We really appreciate it. We're also saying hello this week to Eddie Hendricks, who's saying hello to us from Breda in the Netherlands. Eddie, thank you so much for saying hello. We're also saying hello this week to Jens Nonecki from Hamburg, Germany. I can't wait to go to Hamburg. It's one of those places I want to go. Jens, thank you so much for giving us a little shout out from the center of Europe. And we're also saying hello this week to Katie Darby, who is saying hello to us from just across the pond in Yorkshire, Great Britain. Thanks, Katie. Kapla to you. Charles, who would you like to say hello to?
Let's start off with top fan Eleni Nowicki from Oakland Park, Michigan. Michael L. Pittman from Alberta, Canada. Mark Jacob from South Carolina. And top fan Michael Haney from Kentucky. David, who's on your list?
Well, I'd like to say hello to top fan Lonnie Wright from born in Odessa, Texas, and currently living in Dallas, Texas. Next on the list is Kimberly Brazy. I think that's how you pronounce it, from Michigan. Jeff Yates from San Antonio, Texas. Last on my list is top fan Mark Hall from Moose Lake, Minnesota, United States. Paul, who's on your list?
All right. Well, we've got all kinds of folks on this globe, all kinds of fans giving always an international flavor to the Star Trek community. First of all, I'd like to say a huge kapla to Giota Persis, who is reaching out to us from Thessaloniki, Greece, home of the famous White Tower of Thessaloniki, a tremendous artifact. So thank you so much. The cradle of civilization, Giota. It's great to hear from you. Moving back over a little bit off the compass, we move over to Roland Zay in Niedersachsen, Germany. That we have there. Fantastic place to be, Roland. Thank you for reaching out to us. It's great to hear that there are fans all over the place. Cruising across the Atlantic, let's go to Brazil. Let's go to Fortaleza. It's, I believe, one of the capitals of the northeastern Brazilian states there in Ceará on the coast. And we're delighted to be hearing from Rebecca Fontes in Fortaleza. So thank you so much, and live long and prosper, my friend. And finally for me, huge greetings and thank you for listening to Vincent Blanchonneau in the town of Brest, France. No cracks, Earth people. Again, It's a port city in Brittany in northwest France. So Brest, France, and it is wonderful to hear from Vincent and all of these other fans. Thanks for being aficionados of Star Trek, and thanks for keeping your heart with Trek Talking. Jim, back over to you.
Well, we want to say kapla, and thank you to Chris Kenny, who's listening to us in the great state of Maine, which obviously, for those of you who don't know, that's where Stephen King is from. And, of course, that's where all of his novels take place, oddly enough. So thank you for listening to Chris Kenny in the great state of Maine. We want to say live long and prosper to top fan Danny LaPlante from Bellingham, Washington. And we want to say kapla to top fan Don Neckes, who's listening to us in Niles, Michigan. And last, but definitely not least, we want to say kapla to Peter Finbaugh, who's listening to us in Wakefield, England. And that wraps up our fan shout-outs. Again, if you'd like to hear your name mentioned on a future fan shout-out, head over to our Facebook page and drop us a line. And now it's time for our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys, we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we are going to be remembering six members of our Star Trek community who have gone before us, who would have had birthdays this week. Our very first remembrance goes out to actor Gino Silva, who we lost back in 2020, who played the Romulan Senator Vrax in the fourth season Star Trek Enterprise episodes United and the Aenar, two very excellent episodes. And that's where we first learn about the Aenar. And then, of course, we get Hemmer later on. Gino Silva, great Romulan in that episode. He's also known as Carlos the Barge Captain in The Lost World, Jurassic Park. And he was also in Scarface. He played the Skull, firing the very last shot in the final shootout of that movie. Was in a couple of other movies, but most notably probably A Man Apart and 1979's movie 1941, two very excellent films. So Gina Silva, birthday January 20th, gone before us, lost back in 2020. Happy birthday, Gino. Happy birthday as well to Seymour Castle, who played Lieutenant Commander Hester Delt in the TNG episode The Child. Castle was nominated earlier in his career for an Academy Award for his supporting role in the 1968 film Faces, which was directed by his friend John Cassavetes, famous director right there. And I have not seen Faces, but now I kind of want to check it out because Academy Award performances are not a dime a dozen. He also appeared in several other films by that friend of his. And then kind of in the 70s, did some other things, actually crossed over with James Doohan at one point, which was pretty cool, in some Westerns from that era. And in 1990, I remember actually seeing him as Sam Catchum in the film Dick Tracy. I just really dug that movie when it first came out and made that connection eventually to Star Trek later. I didn't notice it at the time, but just eventually noticed that was the same actor. And a very interesting little trivia thing about Seymour Joseph Castle. Castle was actually responsible for giving his young friend Saul Hudson a famous nickname. Does the name Saul Hudson ring a bell to anybody? Anybody? Maybe if I say that the nickname was Slash, does that ring a bell at all for anybody? So Seymour Joseph Castle was good friends with Saul Hudson and actually gave him the nickname Slash, because he said that Hudson would slash addresses as a kid, meaning that he moved around a lot and just kind of was like ADHD and couldn't stop moving. And if you do not know who Slash is, then you are not a fan of rock bands such as Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver and those sorts of bands. So cool crossover of Seymour Joseph Castle with not only Star Trek, but the rock and roll world. Happy birthday, Seymour Castle. Happy birthday as well to Richard Evans, who played Isak in the TOS episode Patterns of Force. Another one of those kind of classic episodes as far as I'm concerned of the original series. That was in the second season, if I remember right. Richard began his acting career back in the late 50s, but if you saw a television show in the 60s and 70s, there's a good chance he was on it, like guest stars galore. Finally got kind of a regular gig in 1965, appearing in 26 episodes of a popular soap opera called Peyton Place as a character named Paul Hanley. But mostly his jam was guest starring in places. And his last sort of acting stuff that he did was back in the mid-90s. He did later on in 2007 write, direct, and do a little bit of acting in an independent film called Shadow of Rain. So Richard Evans just lost a couple of years ago in 2021. Happy birthday, Richard. Happy birthday as well to actor John McLeam, who played Fento in the TNG episode Who Watches the Watchers? I love that episode. It's so good. It's
awesome,
so like,
episode. One of the greatest.
It's like the Federation's really creepy in that episode. So, you know, Fento being one of the aliens who was there helping out the Federation do what they were doing, spying, et cetera. McLeam also appeared in a number of films and television series back in the day, including Dempsey and Walk Like a Man. But more interestingly, I think, are some of the things these guys did that were not acting. He was an intelligence officer in the United States Navy during World War II and was actually awarded a Bronze Star for his service at that time, which I think is pretty cool. And John McLeam was originally born John Williams, and he changed his name because there were simply too many actors at the time in America trying to make their way named John Williams. And now the John Williams that we all think of course, is the composer. So just a very interesting little tidbit of trivia there for you. And John McLean was also very well known as barring a startling resemblance to George Mitchell, another very famous actor. Even their voices sounded alike. So sometimes when you're watching George Mitchell, you might think it's John. And sometimes when you see John, it might be George. So make sure you know who you're talking about. John McLean. Birthday January 24th, just a couple days ago. We do miss you, brother. Take care, and happy birthday. Two more remembrances for us today. The next is Gregory Sierra, lost in 2021. This man, also a Titan. I know that Paul wants to give us a little knowledge on this. Gregory Sierra in Star Trek played N'Tek in the DS9 episode Second Skin. That's a third season episode. Here's what I know about him. I know that he was on Barney Miller, for like two or three years. Chano Amungwale, is that how you pronounce his name?
That sounds right to me, man. I'm pretty sure that's
the detective sergeant on that show, on Barney Miller. I know he was on Sanford and Sons as a Puerto Rican neighbor, Julio Fuentes. I know that he was on Soap as the anti-communist revolutionary Carlos El Perco Valdez. And I know that he was a regular on Miami Vice for a while until he asked to be written out of the series, and that was all I could find on that. So, interesting little tidbit.
He's like, I'm out of here, man. This series is BS. Write me out of this thing.
And I know that he did Mission Impossible. He crossed over with both Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner on that show, as did many people. And I'm thinking Paul may be chomping at the bit to tell us a little something about lower primates, higher primates, and Gregory Sierra. He was, of course, in Beneath the Planet of the Apes in 1970. And Towering Inferno, I mean, like, this guy's all over the place. Paul, what do you
He's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big fan of this guy. He's done a lot of great stuff. You mentioned Towering Inferno. But he's done a lot of great stuff. I mean, very often he will be drawn to like genre work or crime work or urban storytelling work, type of city stories like Towering Inferno. He was in a really cool movie called Deep Cover. I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but that's a really awesome crime picture. He has actually worked with John Carpenter, okay, in John Carpenter's Vampires. I think 1998, I want to say. He played Father Giovanni in that picture there, which is really cool. Fun, pulpy take on the vampire genre. We mentioned already things like The X-Files. He's been on that. Ray Bradbury Theater. Just tons and tons of cool genre work and a lot of good crime work. He's been on stuff like Magnum P.I., back in the day, Airwolf, Miami Vice, you already mentioned, the Blue Thunder TV series. I mean, this is a cat who's just Hill Street Blues. He's always working, always working. And I'm pretty sure Barney Miller was like the first thing I ever saw him in. But like a lot of really great actors, Gregory Sierra, he started off working with the New York Shakespeare Festival and the National Shakespeare Company. And among his many infamous parts that he's known for is his turn as Macbeth in the New York Shakespeare Festival. So really a tremendous, great actor. I recently watched that Deep Space Nine episode of his, and it's always a mark. You see this with the Cardassians a lot, right? Where somebody is just practically, you know, like got tile grout over their face, right? They're wearing so much makeup, right? And to push through that and still deliver a compelling performance underneath all that stuff is just not an easy thing to do. And Gregory Sierra just did it in, you know, to an absurd degree. A really talented actor. Check out some of his older movies and TV appearances. He's a great, great guy. So, happy birthday to you, sir, wherever you may be.
Happy birthday just yesterday, Gregory Sierra. And our final remembrance this week goes out to none less than one of the big three, Jackson DeForest Kelly. Yes, first name was Jackson, but we all know him as DeForest, who played Bones McCoy on the original series. He was on the original series. He, of course, voiced himself on the animated series later on, went on to do the original six movies, and then was fortunate enough to appear as a 137-year-old Bones in the Next Generation first season episode Encounter at Farpoint. And interesting thing that, you know, a few months prior to his appearance on Encounter at Farpoint, he actually expressed some real skepticism about Next Generation in general. He said, "It's a mystery to me what they are doing," he remarked. "I assume Paramount thinks they can hold on to the Star Trek phenomena. There's no doubt we can't go on forever, so they're trying a way to keep it going, but there's only one Star Trek, and that's ours." So
that's a wonderful wonderful impersonation, my friend. I feel like Bones is right here in front of us.
So I'm just saying that I think it's kind of funny that Bones was a little skeptical and then appeared and then became, of course, iconic for appearing in Next Generation, having followed up on all the stuff that he had already done. There's, you know, there are entire books written about this man, so we can't go too deep into him without taking up the rest of the podcast. So I've just got a couple highlights here that I want to share with everybody, some things that they may or may not know about him. DeForest Kelly was actually born, you know, in 1920, right before the Great Depression, and he always wanted to be a doctor, but was kind of forced not to be by the Great Depression back then. And then during the Second World War, later on, he served in the United States Armed Forces in a non-fighting capacity from March 1943 onward. And then he was actually assigned to a arm of the military there called the First Motion Picture Unit, who was responsible for the production of propaganda and training films. And it was actually his military connection through First Motion Picture Unit that would eventually get him connected with Paramount Pictures and get him a spot in his first motion picture, Fear in the Night, in 1947. That very same year, he co-starred as a singer with legendary entertainers like Bob Hope and Bing Crosby in the musical comedy Variety Girl. And so this man had a voice and could dance And of course, prior to Star Trek, he was on all kinds of westerns and things. You would see his face popping up from time to time on Bonanza or Gunsmoke or any of those other shows. And in 1964, when Gene Roddenberry was starting to contemplate doing Star Trek, on his list of actors for the role of the ship's doctor, Kelly was on the top of Gene Roddenberry's list. But director Robert Butler suggested that veteran actor John Hoyt actually be given the role of the doctor instead. So, of course, that's why in The Cage we have a different doctor bringing martinis to our captain, Captain Jeffrey Hunter. There you go, Pike at the time. This same year, Roddenberry wanted Kelly to replace Hoyt for a second Star Trek pilot, which we all know about, called Where No One Has Gone Before. However, he was again overruled by the director, who at that time was James Goldstone, who wanted Paul Fix for the role. And, of course, it wasn't until 1966 that Roddenberry would actually get to cast DeForest Kelly as the new chief surgeon, Leonard McCoy, for the regular series. We first see him in the Corbomite maneuver. So you always think of him as always being there from the beginning, but, of course, he wasn't, and Roddenberry wanted him there, but he was denied twice. So interesting little set of trivia there. What more can you say about DeForest Kelly? I mean, he just brought a real magic to that role. Right, guys?
Oh, completely.
My name is McCoy.
Iconic, dude.
I'm a doctor.
There's no question about
it. What am I, a doctor or a moon shuttle conductor?
I jumped every time a light came on around here. I'd end up talking to myself.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
You're a healer. There's a patient. That's an order.
I'm a surgeon, not a psychiatrist.
Look, I'm a doctor, not an escalator. Spock, give me a hand.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic. I'm a doctor, not an engineer.
No, you're an engineer.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
You keep saying that. Are you a doctor, aren't you?
I don't know.
Wow.
There you are.
What a string of DeForest Kelly quotes. I love it. That one's always fun to hear again. So happy birthday and lots of memories and remembrances going out to DeForest Kelly. His birthday, January 20th, 1920. Happy birthday and remembrances going out to him. And now I am just going to swing that birthday candle, blazing as it is now, over to Charles, who's going to celebrate some of the living with us.
All right. Thank you. Let's start off with Ian Nooney, who portrayed the young version of Elnar in Picard's episode Absolute Candor. Ian is a very young actor. He's only got about six roles so far, but he's working his way through Hollywood. Dick Scooter played Lieutenant Painter in TOS episode This Side of Paradise. He played this role in one movie, and that was his career in Hollywood. Catherine Leigh Scott played Nura in TNG's episode Who Watches the Watchers? Gee, I think we've heard about that episode this week.
Mm-hmm. Famous for Dark Shadows, too.
Okay, thank you for reading my script, Paul. But is better known as Maggie Evans from several versions of Dark Shadows. She was in the early version, the current version, the remake. Quite a bit of work there. Emily Blanks played Yeoman Tony Barrows in the TOS episode Shore Leave. Did her acting in quite a few many different series from 66 to 86. Now my next two that Jim gave me are some interesting ones. Amok Byron appears Ensign Paul Hickman in TNG's episode Identity Crisis and Ian Andrew Troy in the episode Dark Age. But more interesting, he's not only an actor, but he's a singer and musician. He performed the song Down the Valley in one of the TNG episodes. I can't figure out which one, but he did the song. He did the song for that, and is a singer in the movie Star Trek Beyond. He's got some interesting credits to him. He's multilingual in there. I don't know if he's a dancer, but he's got the rest of the parts in there. And then Philip Lamar voices Alonzo Friedman in Star Trek Lower Decks. Started back in 1984 in the animated series Mr. T. Has appeared in The Book of Boba Fett, Star Wars Bad Batch, and a lot of other lists of over 503 different roles and going. He's in a little bit of everything. Animated shows. He's got so much in there. So, Paul, who's on your list?
Oh, all kinds of interesting folks this week, Charles. First of all, it's happy birthday. Happy birthday going out to Rainn Wilson, right? Who we think of very often as being Dwight on The Office. And a pretty cool cult comic book movie called Super. You have to check that out.
It's a great movie.
It's pretty funny stuff. Really, truly a good cult movie. But we're acknowledging him for his reinvigorated portrayal of Harcourt Fenton Mudd in the Discovery episodes Choose Your Pain and Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. He also played the character and his android replicas in the Star Trek Short Treks episode The Escape Artist, which I believe Rainn Wilson also directed. So usually when somebody tips their hand in the directing universe of Star Trek, they tend to stick around for a while. Isn't that right, Jonathan Frakes? So we may be seeing more of Rainn Wilson in the future. Who knows? Harry Mudd may resurface again, or we may see some more directing from Rainn Wilson. Either way, it's great to have you in the Star Trek universe, sir. Happy birthday. Happy birthday also goes out to actress Olivia Jane D'Abbo, who played Amanda Rogers in the Next Gen episode True Q, one of those great classic True Q episodes, right? And a lot of times Olivia D'Abbo gets kind of confused with her first cousin, Maryam D'Abbo, right? Because that same last name, and it's Maryam that was the Bond girl in The Living Daylights back in the day. So not the same actress. They're related slightly, but just to keep in mind here, Olivia Jane D'Abbo, different person. So I'm just clearing that up, but definitely got to, you know, do a lot of fun stuff with Q and on the Enterprise D there. I really like this actor a lot, and I had never seen him before until this episode, but I'm always talking about how much I love the original series, right? And we are honoring here, because he's having a birthday sometime, wherever you are, sir, the great Lou Antonio. Okay, Lou Antonio is famous for being in that classic. I mean, you want to talk about an episode of Star Trek that casts a long shadow.
Yeah.
Let that be your last battlefield. Okay,
yeah.
Where he is of the two people who are half white on one side and black on the other side, right? Lou Antonio played Lokai, who is the one who's being chased, right? The one who's being pursued by Riddler actor Frank Gorshin, right? And back and forth. And people are always like, you know, we hear this so often on Trek Talk. Oh, when did Star Trek start getting all woke and political and start getting all, you know, way into like things like race and stuff? I just want to see starships and warp drive and all those things. I don't want to see like social things and society and whatnot. Well, folks, how about go back to 1969 and watch some Star Trek? Because Star Trek has always been doing stuff like that. And I can think of no other episode that did it more profoundly in a way that really got everyone's attention in such a unique and enduring way, partially because of Lou Antonio's work. It really brought tremendous empathy and pathos to that character and strength as well. It's a phenomenal role. Also famous for being the legendary movie Cool Hand Luke from director Stuart Rosenberg, the Paul Newman picture. I'm hoping folks have seen Cool Hand Luke, but you never know.
Oh, yeah.
Now and then there's somebody who doesn't know what that is.
That's like, yeah, no.
I think, yeah, that's one of those.
It's safe bet, but you never know, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I can't remember what the role was, but I remember reading that Lou Antonio was up for a role in The Godfather, and I don't think he got it. You know, I'd be really curious to do a little bit more digging and find out which one it was. But this is a guy who worked a ton, right? I think he might be retired now, but CSI, The West Wing, Fugitive, Felicity, Chicago Hope, I mean, a ton, Boston Legal, a ton of stuff. Chicago Hope, just all over the place. But if, for me, I'm always going to go back. I'm always going to think of Lokai because of that episode. So I think one of the top movies, top episodes ever that folks will think of when they think of Star Trek. So because of that enduring role. So pretty amazing, cool stuff. Happy birthday, Lou Antonio. You're really cool, sir. And happy birthday goes out also to David Diggs, who voices Andorian Commander Tyses on Star Trek Prodigy. David Diggs does a lot of work as well. Interesting name here, folks, but I think you may have heard of this particular actor because this actor works quite a bit and gets a lot of work. I'm talking about the actor named Deep Roy, which is a pretty cool name. Right?
Super cool name. So, I love it.
But we know Deep Roy for playing the role of Keenser in the 2009 boot of Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond. Scotty's little engineer friend, if you will. But Deep Roy is from Kenya. He's done a ton of work. You will note him from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where he's pretty much every Oompa Loompa that there is. Right.
I don't think not pretty much almost everyone. He was every Oompa Loompa.
Right? Completely. And this is a Grizz is going way back to the back of the sock drawer, but he's also got a role in the movie that has gotten so much more rediscovery in the last couple of years, The Never Ending Story. Deep Roy was in that as well. So a lot of work going on for this individual.
Don't forget, he was in Flash.
Yep.
He played Fellini.
Oh, right, the Flash Gordon picture.
Yeah, he played. Yep. He was in Flash Gordon. Yep.
And he was. Excellent. And he was in 7 episodes of Doctor Who as well. He crossed over into the Whoverse.
Oh man,
ooh.
There you go. So, I think it's safe to say that if Deep Roy is at a convention, his pen's going to be busy because he's appealing to a lot of different people from a lot of different parts of genre land. Right? Who he's been in a ton of stuff. So always fun to see people like that who have not just done one piece of franchise material, but several, and are super, super popular. And lastly for me, happy birthday goes out to actress Saya, 3 different actresses who played Tora Zayal. Who's Tora Zayal? Well, Gul Dukat's daughter, man.
What? Spoiler
appearing,
alert!
Sorry.
Wait. It gets better than that.
You got a
20-year
shelf life on
daughter.
Those things. Say it again, man. Say it again.
I said Gul Dukat's half Bajoran daughter.
Oh yeah, there's stuff going on there. Gul Dukat, you're a scamp, Gul Dukat. That's why you're my favorite Cardassian ever. So I just love that guy. Appeared in, of course, Deep Space 9 episodes Indiscretion. Perhaps that's maybe what Eric is referring to with that title. And Return to Grace. So all the way down, cast members, you're all part of the Star Trek universe. You're all having a birthday. You're all starting the new year with a birthday, which is a pretty exciting thing. So our wish to you on Trek Talking is that you all have spectacular years, and may you get lots of work or lots of satisfaction, whatever it is that you seek in your careers going forward. And with that, I'll take that flaming dilithium birthday candle and pass it back over to Jim.
Yeah, I've got a few, not a lot, but a few, but I do have a really good one. We want to say happy birthday to Kaylee Harwood, who played Lieutenant Parker in Strange New Worlds episodes Momenti Mori, and that was a great episode. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. We want to say happy birthday to Sasha Strieger, who appeared as the holographic representation of Zora in Star Trek Short Treks episode Calypso, one of the best.
The best.
Absolutely.
It still softens my
heart
when I think about it.
If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. I'm not sure how they're going to fit that into, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, a lot of fun there. We also want to say happy birthday to Mia Kirshner, who portrayed Amanda Grayson in Star Trek Discovery, a great portrayal of a younger version of Amanda, I might add. We also want to say happy birthday to Richard Poe, who portrayed Golovec in Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and Star Trek Voyager. He played the same Cardassian character on all three series, which is really, really cool when you think about it. We also want to say happy birthday to Tracy Middendorf, who was the second actress to play Tora Ziel, and she appeared in the DS9 episode For the Cause. So we have two actresses to play the same character that were born in the same week. How odd is that, huh?
Pretty cool.
And for this next one, I've got to play the birthday song. Here we go.
Well, there's a punk in the alley and he's looking for a fight. There's an Arab on the corner buying everything in sight. There's a mother in the ghetto with another now for feet. Seems that everywhere you look today there's misery and greed. I guess you know the earth is going to crash into the sun, but that's no reason why we shouldn't have a little fun. So if you think it's scary, if it's more than you can take, just blow out the candles and have a piece of cake.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
And if you've listened to the podcast in the past, you know that we reserve that song for very special people, very close friends of the podcast. Unless you listened last week when these giant snowflakes were falling and that song kept playing by mistake. Okay.
But last week was that, pretty funny how many songs got played incorrectly.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
Last week was strange, but this is a live podcast, so that happens. But under normal circumstances, we only play that song for very special people who are very good friends and very close to the podcast. And that definitely goes out for this next birthday. I ran into this person at a convention in Albany, and it was I went to actually meet Robert Englund, and she was sitting at the table next to him. And my wife and daughter went over and talked to her. And then they came and tracked me down and said, hey, we found this woman that would be great on your podcast. And I went over and talked to her. And not only was she great on our podcast, but her and I actually did a podcast right here every Sunday night called Stunt Trek. And we did it for a year. So you guys can go back on our archives and you can check out Stunt Trek. She was a stunt woman, actress, and stunt coordinator who worked between 1995 and 2001 as a regular stunt performer on Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager. And she was a regular stunt double for B'Elanna Torres actress Roxanne Dawson. She even got to wear one of B'Elanna Torres' old wigs. She also played Minya in Deep Space Nine. I believe that was Garrick's mother. At least I think they alluded to that. I don't think they ever said it in the episode, but I got the impression that Mila was Garrick's mother. And when the Cardassians come in and blow up the house and she dies and falls down the stairs, that is none other than the one, the only Leslie Hoffman. I've known her for about 4 years now. She's absolutely awesome, and I can't say enough good things about Leslie. So happy birthday to the one and only Leslie Hoffman. And you can head over to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page, and you can wish Leslie a happy birthday yourself. Usually she'll get right back to you relatively quick. So happy birthday to Leslie Hoffman. Anybody want to say anything about Leslie before we move on?
Well, I'll just say that I really enjoyed – yeah, sorry, Charles, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say I didn't talk to Leslie a ton, but I certainly did enough podcasts with her to get some great stories out of her. And I think what I'll just say is I love the joy that she has when she talks about all the cool roles she's gotten to do. And she's done a lot. And when you get her going, man, does she have stories to tell. So I just really do appreciate her, and I'm wishing her a super happy birthday. And I'll just say that officially, canon-wise, Mia isn't Garrix, but yeah. She absolutely is. In fact, in the novel A Stitch in Time, which is a great Garrick novel, that's where they actually say that she for sure is. Not a canon source, but I think we're pretty much there.
Yeah, I got the impression from the episode that she might have been. They didn't say it, but I thought so.
Well, I actually got to host her Star Trek Las Vegas convention that Jim couldn't make, so I got a lot of stories there, and then the stories from the podcast. And Jim, don't forget, where's your hall pass?
Yeah, absolutely. If you guys are horror fans, there's a little movie you might have heard of called A Nightmare on Elm Street, and Leslie actually has a role in that movie where you actually get to see Leslie face and all. She's not dressed up as a Cardassian, and she's not dressed up as B'Elanna Torres. She actually is herself. And the scene is where Nancy's running down the hallway after she has a nightmare in class, and she bumps into Freddy Krueger. And only it's not actually Freddy Krueger. It's Leslie Hoffman. And guess what? I happen to have the clip right here, and I'll play it for you.
Tina? Where's your pass? Screw your
And I love to play that clip anytime I get a chance to. And Leslie actually got to wear the actual Freddy Krueger glove, the real one that Robert Englund wore, and the actual sweater that he wore in that clip.
In fact,
and today,
there's an interesting story in that sweater, Jim, because that actual sweater was lost. And they made a new sweater for the second movie, and they changed the color scheme. So she's
the
only one that gets to wear that specific sweater from the first movie.
Interesting.
Yep. And in that scene I just played for you guys, Leslie also holds a distinctive place in the canon of Nightmare on Elm Street because she's the only other person to play Freddy Krueger other than Robert Englund up to the remakes, up to that point. Because when she runs into, when she gets bumped into, she actually is playing Freddy. And that's why the voice changes from hers to Robert's, halfway through that scene.
Yep.
So, yeah. So happy birthday to Leslie Hoffman. And I guess that wraps up our regular podcast. But we are going to talk a little bit about Attack Wing here. There are two new faction packs out, neither of the two that I have, unfortunately. But Eric is well-versed in them, and Eric is going to touch on some of the highlights of those for us. And we've got about 15 minutes, so I think we can squeeze in the highlights of the packs, right?
Sure, yeah, we can sort of blaze through them. There's definitely some really amazing stuff in these packs. So just to remind everybody, since it's been so long since we talked about Star Trek Attack Wing, these two items we're talking about tonight are faction packs. And a faction pack is a box that gives you four ships and a bunch of tokens, and in one case here, at least some bonus content. And it's about $40, so the kind of cost per ship ratio is lower than you would have paid back in the day when you were paying $15 per single upgrade pack. And so it's a pretty good way to add stuff to your fleet. We have two very cool packs that came out in November of 2022 that we're going to blaze through tonight. One is called Secrets of the Tal Shiar, and it is a Romulan-based pack. And one is called Ships of the Line, and it's a Federation-based pack. And so I kind of wanted to start with Ships of the Line. And for me, here are some of the most amazing highlights about these packs in general and about this pack specifically. So back in the day when they first invented the faction pack, there's four ships, four models in the box. How many ship cards do you get? You get four. Now, in the Federation Ships of the Line pack, you get eight unique ships. You get two of the Prometheus class. You get two of the Akira class. You get two of the Sovereign class. And you get two of the Saber class. And those are all unique ships. If you flip those cards over, that's right, on their backsides, you just flip the card right over, you've got generic versions of all those ships. So if you really want to be technical about it, this pack comes with eight unique ships and eight generic ships, which is pretty cool. That's 16 ships that you can build right out the gate from this pack. This pack also introduced an interesting new type of card, David, I'm losing the name of it. This one in particular is called Federation Prototype, but what's the type of card called? It's a ship, Starship Construction card. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so a Starship Construction card is an entirely new type of card in the game. It does not take up a slot. It's got an icon in the corner that is a hook. And this one in particular only costs you 1 point, one SP. It's called Federation Prototype. And this one in particular, you equip to a ship that is a prototype ship. So anything that has after USS the actual name of the class of the ship. For example, on the Sovereign class, the USS Sovereign could run this. On the Saber class, the USS Saber could run this card. It gives you some extra defense dice. It gives you some other cool stuff, some slots. Cool new type of card. This pack comes with three new admirals that you can flip over who become captains on their other side. And then it comes with a fourth captain. We've got George Sanders. We've got Strickler. It's interesting they didn't give him his first name on the card. We've got Theodoric Patterson. And most hated, we have Alina Nechayev. Cool to have her finally in the game. We did not previously have a card for her. So nice to have her here. We've got three elite talents. We've got five new crew cards. We've got one question mark card, which is the Doctor, the EMH Mark I, which is a reprint of an earlier card. You've got four tech upgrades, and you've got six weapons that come with this thing. Now, not only is it all those cards, but this pack in particular, the Ships of the Line pack, also comes with a campaign. So out of the box, you have a mission and campaign guide here that guides you through a competitive campaign that you can play over a series of games with a friend of yours. It's made for two players. There are several missions in here, four missions in the campaign, and you just kind of get to build your ship up and go against each other and have a little story attached to that. So I don't know. When it comes to this pack in particular, the Ships of the Line pack, it comes with a lot of content. We didn't talk yet about the models. The models have that metallic paint job that we saw during the sort of like 50th anniversary era when WizKids was putting out new ships. So the Sovereign, the Enterprise E, looks amazing. It's got this beautiful metallic blue paint on it. All the silver paints, I think, look really good. I'll be curious to get David's take on them, too. So the quality of the models, same sculpts we've seen in the past, but you get so many cards in this pack. And then you also get the campaign components to it. We're not going to talk about too many specific cards, but before I pass this on to David, I will just say that my absolute favorite card in this pack, hands down, is something that the Federation has always needed. It's called Type 10 Phasers. This card fills actually two weapon upgrade slots, so you can only run it on a ship where you got two weapon upgrade slots. But what it does for 3 points, is you get plus one attack dice, and you can reroll up to two blanks. If the defending ship has no active shields, instead, convert those blanks to battle stations. So for 3 SP, this card gives you an enormous amount of flexibility, automatic rerolls on those blanks. Now you don't have to run Picard 9 on every single ship so that you can get that free target lock, right? Right, David? So, David, what are some of your favorite parts of this pack so far?
Well, the models aren't as good. The plastic on them, for some reason, seems a little brittle, but the overall pack, I believe, is really good. I'm really liking the Federation prototype card, where you can just stick that on a unique ship, and it's just like, not only that, it gives you plus one defense, and it has the option to allow you to put any other type of slot on there, crew, tech, or weapon. But, I mean, just the idea of being able to, like, do anything almost with it, it's almost like, there's a lot of options that you can get with just that card. I'm liking that card more and more, and the reroll, you know, being able to, that actually saved me on a couple of runs before with using that card, and I was able to survive. But, I definitely like the Type 10 card, phaser type. That one's really nice. I like this whole faction. I'm a very big Federation player myself, and some of the cards in there is just like really nice. So I was really happy with it.
Yeah, some of the cards that I know David has played the most against me since these packs came out are the USS Sovereign, because that card has a sweet ability that if you have an Admiral equipped to that ship, you can do the Admiral's action for free every single turn. So you throw Maxwell Forrest on there and forget about it, right? You're turning all day long. And the other card that David has used, I think, particularly effectively against me, I guess in the past, is multi-vector assault mode. You'll remember that the Prometheus is the ship in Star Trek that splits into three different ships. And there was an old Prometheus pack that came out years ago, but the multi-vector assault mode card on that was not very good. This one here is much, much better. We're still kind of figuring out how to use it, but it gives you that multiple attack thing that not too many other cards can do. So this pack has a lot of really cool stuff. Oh, and to boot, if you're a Star Trek Online player, this pack also comes with a code.
Oh, yeah.
That gives you, let's see, captains can use this code, claim your free Elite Services Starter Pack plus one Tier 6 ship of your choice, Akira, Prometheus, Saber, or Sovereign. So you get free stuff for Star Trek Online, too. So, yeah. So, Jim and Charles, did you guys have anything you wanted to say about this faction pack here? I know you haven't really had a chance to play with it, but, yeah, Charles, what do you got?
I just cracked it open with looking at cards. And, okay, jump right on in. That starship construction.
Mm-hmm.
For 1 point, gives you an extra slot, and then gives you abilities. I love this. I was looking at George Sanders.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, move a free soft or straight one maneuver, but if you've got the prototype, then you can do a hard maneuver instead. It's like, that's some nice abilities. Some of the functions they add, I think I was looking at Geordi, where it's like, okay, you can treat a reveal maneuver as green, increase by one, but if you happen to have construction in there, you can do both.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, why are you not putting construction on every ship in this pack just to get some of these abilities? I thought interesting that Geordi LaForge has his picture, and yet we got a TOS picture.
Yeah.
And the Shakedown command, Shakedown crew.
Yeah, there. It is kind of interesting that they sort of have cards from all over the timeline. So this one is not necessarily targeting, you know, any specific timeline, because you're right. We've got movies. We've even got like Scotty from when he was on TNG. So that's kind of like the ultimate crossover right there.
Exactly.
And so,
something I'm looking forward to coming up probably next month is Nate wants to do a little event at our store, and I'm not sure if it's going to be just Nate, Terrence, and I, if we got a couple of friends that we might throw in, but he wants to do a little Attack Wing mini event. And the requirements are you're only allowed to bring in the last four faction packs. And look at these cards. I'm kind of looking forward to that event.
That is sounds like a fun event. I know in Portland here we ran an event where you could only use the cards from one of these faction packs. So you could either play Romulans or the Federation, and that was a pretty fun event as well. So yeah,
that's probably about what we're going to probably do, is limit you to one of the boxes only.
Absolutely.
But I think there's going to be some fun Fed builds in that box.
These cards are amazing. Can't recommend them enough. $40 for all of this stuff. We've got just a few minutes left, so let's see if we can't whip through the Romulan pack. This pack is called Secrets of the Tal Shiar, and one of my favorite parts of this pack is the models. So whereas the Federation pack comes with the campaign and all that sort of stuff, and the models are okay, these models in the Romulan pack are amazing. They are made of translucent plastic that has kind of a smoky look to it, and they're painted with little sparkly stars. So when you put these on your space mat, your 3x3 space mat, they look cloaked, and they really do, particularly if you're running like black bases or that type of thing, they really kind of start to blend into the background, which I think is really fun as a Romulan player.
Well, the only time you've ever gotten these type of ships were if you won one of the competitions at, I think, like the World.
The convention exclusive pack was the one cloaked pack, and that was like you could get it at one convention, and the day after that convention, that pack was selling for, you know, $200.
Yes. Why I've never gotten that set, because that set was costing so much. It was just worth so much to people.
Yeah, it's literally the only thing in Attack Wing that I still don't own. But let's talk more about this pack. So similar to the number of ships, you got 8 ships in the Federation one. You do get 6 ships in this pack, which is pretty cool. One is a reprint of the Scimitar, which is particularly useful because the Scimitar was unavailable to a lot of people who didn't get it right when it first came out, because it's such a great ship. So you get a new Scimitar in here. You get two Valdor-class ships, Denatra's style ship, both of which are very cool. You get Dideridex ships, and you get a scout vessel, a Tal Shiar scout vessel. We have a reprint in here that I think is particularly interesting. So you got 7 captains. One of them, of course, is Shinzon. It's a brand new Shinzon with more talent slots and the ability to give your ship battle stations. There's also a reprint / new print of Denatra. So it's the same Denatra that you know well and love that gives you that +1 attack dice for ships that are in range 1. But now it adds the ability to that if those friendly ships are Valdor or Sovereign class, it also helps you convert a blank into a hit. So Denatra just got a little bit better, which I think is very cool. You have some Romulan ale in here. You have 4 elite talents. You also have a new type of card which just came out in the Klingon pack not too long ago. Ambassador card. So this comes with 2 ambassadors that give you a special ability at the beginning of the game. It comes with 6 crew cards, comes with 5 weapon cards, and it comes with 5 tech cards. Now, rather than having a campaign associated with it, this pack actually comes with 2 of kind of those old-style missions. Do you remember those missions that everything used to come with? It had the colored cards. We get 2 new missions with this pack. So that is a cool way to play as well. So to me, great value in the way the models look. There are like 40 cards in this pack. And I will tell you that I just have to give you one, right? I have to tell you what my favorite card is, and David's going to know what I'm going to say. It's the Romulan Cloaking Device. The Romulan Cloaking Device is a two-point tech that adds a cloak to your ship's action bar, and then this ship may use the one bank or the two bank maneuver template when doing a sensor echo. So now you're rolling up on somebody and you echo, but do you echo straight sideways? Nope. You use your bank template and you come at them from the flank side. Such a cool way to play. You throw that on the scimitar and forget about it. It's scary. So, yeah, I love this pack. I love some of the really cool Romulan stuff that you can do. And it definitely boosts the Romulan faction in general. Wouldn't you agree, David?
Yeah, it's definitely fun to play, especially when the ships all look cloaked. It's kind of hard to see where they are, so it's like, oh, where did they go?
Are you looking forward to this pack, Charles?
I'm looking at a car, and it's like, okay, that is interesting. B4.
Oh, yeah.
That looks like a mean car. It's like, okay, you don't want that going up against a Federation ship.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
then you
right.
also don't want that going up against the Enterprise.
Nope.
Because that is going to mess up anybody running the Enterprise. And interesting that he is a Romulan /
Independent.
Independent card.
Yep, so you can run him without a faction penalty on an independent ship. Well, two great packs. They've only been out for a few months, guys. They're $40 each. They come with all these ships and stuff. I'm positive that most local game stores are able to order these, even if they don't stock this stuff normally. Not every game store, but most game stores are able to order this
Should
stuff.
Should be able to. If they can get a hold of anything that's WizKids, which HeroClix and such.
Yep.
Now, personally for me, you guys got November. We got ours last week, week before. The last couple of weeks when we got our shipment in. But some of the other shipments are coming through now.
Nice.
So these cards are available.
Well, check them out and try and buy it from your local game store if you can. Right, Jim?
Yeah, I'll still get them for you. My local game shop told me, go to Amazon. I'm not going to order those for you. Go figure.
But hopefully most people's local game shops won't be like that.
Well, so. Okay, well, Jim, we need to find Jim a friendly local game store.
We do.
Not
and
just
absolutely.
A local game store.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
we
have three game shops here in Rutland. None of them will get Attack Wing for me, and none of them are interested in playing Attack Wing at their shops. Go figure.
Oof. If you are an Attack Wing fan, please, and you're in the Portland, Oregon area, please make sure that you check out our Facebook page. We are called the Portland Star Trek Attack Wing Captains. You're welcome to join. We have an active community here. We play at Guardian Games at 345 Southeast Taylor here in Portland. And we have the kind of relationship where I get to text our game store the day before we show up, and they have it all ready for us when we get there. So, sorry, Jim. I wish it was that way for you, buddy.
Okay, let me jump in then. If you're ever interested in Vegas, look up War Room Games. We're out in Sunset up by the park. Come visit it and tell them you're looking for the Attack Wing players. We show up on Friday night, and we're doing all kinds of gaming up there, board gaming. We've done they've done Attack Wing, Fallout, all kinds of stuff. And we're always up for looking for finding something to play. So come look us up.
Well, I guess we went a little bit over tonight, but that doesn't surprise me. I thought we might. But at any rate, I want to say thank you so much to Josh Dirksen for hanging out with us. And I'm really intrigued about Black Alert, guys.
I know.
That was
such a great little drop there.
That was
awesome.
Was a teaser.
Now, he said it's a Star Trek Discovery-based board game?
That's what he said.
Yep.
Like a board game like Monopoly or like a
RPG? No. Well, you have to know. We were just differentiating between video game and not video game. So it is a not video game.
Ah, okay.
okay, it's, Jim.
Yeah,
not the Monopoly. Think about the board games you see at your local game store.
Yeah, the one that
not Target, but at the game store.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. I'm looking forward to that for sure.
I want more detail. I want detail.
I wasn't even expecting that when that dropped. I was like, whoa, freeze. Let's back up.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you.
Yeah. That was a shocker. Anyways, we'd also like to say thank you so much to Paul for hanging out with us. I know we had to run, but thank you so much. And, of course, thank you to David for hanging out and truck talking with us. Thank you, David.
Yeah, this has been fun. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, thank you to our very own Charles for hanging out and truck talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun getting into a TAC wing. We had some interesting birthdays, and we got some future Star Trek. Looking forward to it.
We squeezed it all in. And thank you so much to Eric for hanging out, Trek talking with us as well. Thank you, Eric.
You bet. Great show, guys, and thanks for hanging out. That was fun.
And next week, same bat time, same bat channel, Michael Jan Friedman is going to be joining us. And if you don't know who that is, wow.
Look him up.
Go and check. Over 80 Star Trek novels to his name. He worked on the comic books. And he's done it all. So he's going to be with us. He's got a new project that he's working on. He's also going to be appearing at Trek Long Island, where I will be as well. And we'll talk a little bit about that. So that'll be next Thursday, same bat time, same bat channel. So at any rate, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.